What's up, my sleeve? On a brand new daddy on board? How about gender-neutral toys for good girls and boys? We'll talk attachment parenting and Blossom is getting a divorce. All this and a whole lot more awaits you right around the corner on a brand new daddy on board. Welcome to Daddy on Board 113, a collection and regurgitation of the week's parenting news from a dad's perspective. That dad is yours truly, Mike Quackenbush. You may know me from my work here at Grizzly Productions, or from professional wrestling organization Chikara, or from my brief but memorable run as Walter Nebaker on the Glenn Larson early 80s sci-fi flop, Auto Man. This podcast and others like it are made possible only through the generous support of show sponsor Cobra Electronics. If you like getting podcasts for free, then rally to the battle cry of Yo Joe and type Cobra.com into your browser of choice. There, a world of Gizmonic innovations await to simplify your life, and you'll be pleased to know that all of the great gift ideas contained therein are gender neutral, so you don't have to feel weird about giving a high-end radar detector to your six-year-old niece. I certainly didn't. All right, well, the Wall Street Journal published a piece on gender-neutral toys in the past week, and so did a ton of other publications, and then there were a ton of blogs about it, and some of these actually matter, but a lot of them don't. The Wall Street Journal says a gender-neutral vision for toy buying is coming to life in Sweden, where Top Toy Group, a licensee of the Toys R Us brand, has published an attention-getting catalog for the Christmas season. On some pages of this catalog, girls brandish toy guns, while boys wield blow dryers and cuddle with dolls. Top Toy, a privately held company that published 12 million of these catalogs, own the BR Toys chain, and they've got over 300 stores in Northern Europe. Sweden's top advertising watchdog, known as, get ready for this, Reklamombudsmannen, has taken the retailer to task in recent years for catalogs and ads that showcase girls that play with dolls, scrapbooks, kitchen or beauty toys, and boys that play with guns, trains, tech gadgets, and cars. They also criticized Hennes & Mauritz for ads with bikini models that they felt were too tan. Now, I'm sorry if I get off on a tangent here for a second, but listen, I don't get a lot of sun myself. I'm not one of those people that thinks being tan is the same as being cool. In fact, most of the coolest people I know are pasty white, and I do not fraternize with mimes. Having said this, can we leave the bikini models alone, please? Those poor bikini models. They clearly aren't getting enough to eat. They're always stuck rolling around in sand and such, and you know, once that gets into your sneakers, or worse, gets tracked into your house, ugh, what a nightmare. They are living a nightmare, those bikini models. Anyway, Elizabeth Trotzig, who serves as the ombudsman for Reklamombudsmannen, applauds Top Toy. She says this, quote, "I'm convinced others will also follow this line. It's especially important when it comes to children and young people, since they don't have the same experience and opportunity to evaluate marketing communication," end quote. Now, I read quite a bit on this topic, several different articles, and I want to say this. Anyone that is agonizing over whether or not they are giving gifts that are sufficiently gender neutral this gift-giving season, like you, KJ Dallantoni of the Motherlode blog on nytimes.com, seem to be missing the point of the gift-giving season. So here's some quick guidelines I just made up that will remain true as long as we have free will. 1. Give people things they want. 2. Don't give people crap. If you're going to take the time to procure a gift for someone, and this is someone that you feel is worthy of having a gift bestowed upon them, why give them anything other than a gift they will enjoy? I'm not talking about when you just blow it, you know, and you screw up and you get something that you didn't realize was crap. I'm talking about knowingly giving crap. If the recipient, for example, is someone that you hate, just don't get them a gift. Giving them fruitcake is too passive-aggressive, even by my passive-aggressive standards. Does this little girl love transforming robots from outer space? Well, then you should get her one of those. Get it for her because she likes it, not because it defies gender stereotypes. And if this girl wants a hot pink tea set for Christmas, well, then that's what she should get. I've never known a kid shy about making a Christmas list. And anyone sitting down with that list evaluating each item for its gender neutrality needs a good swift kick in the Yuletide log. Trying to prove to the others in your monthly book club that you're the most pretentious slash politically correct might earn you a nod of recognition from a wrinkled brow over room temperature Earl Grey sweetened with Splenda, but that will score you 0 points with a temperamental boy hosting a hot pink tea party instead of changing Optimus Prime into an 18-wheeler. And kids have long memories for holiday slights versus the memory span of adults. I don't remember what I had for breakfast today, but I remember quite clearly the morning my brother got the Decepticon seeker jet Skywarp that had been on my Santa list. I remember it like it was yesterday, Mom and Dad. Like it was yesterday.
What else?
The Chicago Sun-Times asks if attachment parenting is the reason Blossom announced her impending divorce this past week from her husband of 9 years. This made the Daddy on Board podcast ask, what is attachment parenting? And now, here are some answers. Pediatrician William Sears coined the term attachment parenting to refer to a philosophy that encompasses things like co-sleeping with children to prolonged breastfeeding. Attachment parenting calls for children, especially newborns, to be carried at all times, often in a sling, to foster closeness and security through constant touch. Now, critics of attachment parenting's 24/7 togetherness ideal cite the debilitating effect this can have on parents' relationships, and Blossom's remarks to the press that she and her husband had not enjoyed a night alone in 7 years, and that they sleep in separate beds so that each can co-sleep with one of their offspring, has brought attachment parenting into the spotlight. Blossom, under her unpronounceable real name, has even penned a book on the topic called Beyond the Sling, a real-life guide to raising confident, loving children the attachment parenting way. Which is a title so overly long, even Morrissey would blush. Well, I don't know what people think of attachment parenting because I only just learned it existed. But we tossed this out to loyal da bobbers just like you, and we got these reactions to the Sun-Times assertion that attachment parenting did end Blossom's marriage. Jonathan Hand said, I thought that exact same thing when I heard this news. And P.J. Palmer checked in with us over on our Facebook fan page saying, anything taken to extremes is not healthy. Balance in your life is so important, and it sounds like there was no balance in this particular case. Michelle Thompson wrote to me, attachment parenting is ridiculous. You need to love your children with all your heart, but they need to grow up knowing that they are not the center of your universe and that they can stand on their own 2 feet. No wonder kids feel entitled to everything. Jeffrey Mathias wrote to me, I have seen kids thrive with reasonable attachment parenting. Ours did not. Implementing consistency in her life was a very important first step in living life with a colicky child. The sling did get some seriously heavy rotation, though, and the experience there has positively shaped my relationship with my daughter. Fellow dad blogger type Raul Colon of PapaHeroes.com said, I think people are always trying to tie one thing with another. There are so many other factors, you can't put the weight on only one. Well, thanks for checking with me over on my Facebook fan page. You know, you can always drop off your thoughts on anything we post up, whether it's over on Google Plus or by tweeting me at TheDaddyOnBoard. That's also how I cull little victories for the segment at the end of the show entitled Little Victories, if you are wondering how that gets done. Okay. NBCNews.com carried this ballsy article. Boys who are born with an undescended testicle are at increased risk of developing testicular cancer later in life, a new report suggests. The report found that boys born with one or both testes undescended were 3 times as likely as others to develop cancer. This affects about 6% of all newborn boys. In some cases, the testes descend on their own in the first few months of life, but if they don't, doctors recommend surgery to correct the problem, usually when the boy is between 6 and 18 months old. That surgery is to protect the boy's fertility, not to prevent cancer, says a professor in the Department of Surgical Pediatrics at the Royal Hospital for Sick Children in Glasgow. Scots specialize in this sort of thing and sometimes wear kilts. If the testes were left inside the abdomen, the temperature would be too high, and the boy would have fertility problems. Now, currently no one knows why this results in a higher rate of testicular cancer among boys. It could be that the testes in these boys are abnormal to start out with, and that would explain why they don't descend when they should, and also why they are more likely to develop cancer. Parents, spare your son discussion of his abnormal testes later in life, please. This message is brought to you by Males from the Planet Earth. What else do I have here? Motoko Rich penned a great piece just a day or two ago that I'd like to rip off for you. Hispanic students now make up nearly a quarter of the nation's public school enrollment, according to an analysis of census data by the Pew Hispanic Center, and are the fastest-growing segment of the school population. Yet, non-white Latino children seldom see themselves in books written for young readers. Now, how can we remedy this? Well, I think the answer is obvious. We ask the Hispanics to stop reproducing. Failing that, though, those slow-evolving curriculums I alluded to a few stories back need to be updated. Education experts and teachers who work with large Latino populations say that the lack of familiar images could be an obstacle as young readers work to build stamina and deepen their understanding of story elements like character motivation. While there are exceptions, including books by Julia Alvarez, Pam Munoz Ryan, Alma Flor Ada, and Gary Soto, what is available is not finding its way into classrooms, said one Ohio State University professor. Books commonly read by elementary school children, those with human characters as opposed to talking animals or trolls, include the Junie B. Jones, Cam Jansen, Judy Moody, Stink and Big Nate series, all of which feature a white protagonist. An occasional African-American, Asian, Native American, or Hispanic character may pop up in a supporting role, but these books depict a predominantly white suburban milieu. Quote, kids do have a different kind of connection when they see a character that looks like them, or they experience a plot or a theme that relates to something they've experienced in their lives, end quote, said Jane Fleming, an assistant professor at the Erickson Institute, a graduate school in early childhood development based in Chicago. She and Sandy Carrillo, an elementary school teacher in Chicago who works with students that speak languages other than English at home, reviewed 250 book series aimed at second to fourth graders and found just two that featured a Latino main character. The Cooperative Children's Book Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Education, which compiles statistics about the race of authors and characters in children's books published each year, found that in 2011, just over 3% of the 3,400 books reviewed were written by or written about Latinos, a proportion that has not changed much over the preceding 10 years. Latino education advocates and authors say they do not want schools to resort to tokenism, however. Quote, my skin crawls a little when this literature is introduced because people are being righteous, said Ms. Alvarez, the author of the Tia Lola series, as well as Return to Sender. Quote, it should be as natural reading about these characters as white characters, she said. Well, what about you? Are you able to find books that reflect your own child? Tell me a little bit about your experience with this. You can tweet me at the Daddy on Board or drop your commentary off on either our Facebook fan page or over on Google+, where I'll collect any relevant thoughts and feedback and serve it up to you next week here on the Dob. Parents, let's talk for a moment about the kind of panic that we could do without. If, like me, you're a professional wrestler and you're often in messy locker rooms and you have that awful moment where you can't locate your phone, let me tell you, there's something out there to remove this from your life. Ladies, and I know that you're all ladies in my listening audience, if you ever put your purse down only to discover it's not where you thought you left it, there's that momentary panic we could all do without. Perhaps you've misplaced your keys or your laptop bag or whatever that case might be. The device that you need, friends, is the Cobra Tag. It's made by our great show sponsors and friends over at Cobra Electronics. And what you do is you take that Cobra Tag sensor, you attach it to your keys, your handbag, your computer bag, or any other item that you want to protect from loss, and the sensor is going to communicate with a free app that you download onto your phone that reminds you if you leave it behind. The Cobra Tag's a two-way finder system. You just tap the button on the Cobra Tag key fob, and it'll ring your smartphone. And if you're looking for your Cobra Tag protected item, you use the phone's application to make the Cobra Tag key fob ring. The powerful Phone Halo application can even be set to lock your phone when you get out of range. You'll never lose your valuables again with the two-way locator system known as the Cobra Tag. And you don't have to just go to Cobra.com to find out more about it. There's plenty of information there. If you want to get one right now, well, great online retailers, for example, Amazon.com right now is offering tremendous savings off the listed retail price of Cobra Tag if you head over there and act right now. Look for it online, Amazon.com, and plenty of other websites, and pick up one for you or someone you know who's also forgetful. And thanks to our friends over at Cobra for sponsoring the show. Still to come on this edition of Daddy on Board, I've got your little victories and a story about what to feed your kids. But first, I want to look at the New York Times. This past week, both sides of the college coin came under fire in their pages. Now, inspired by the likes of Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, or even Mark Zuckerberg, all of whom found fame and fortune without a college diploma, more and more kids are declaring that college is for suckers. From the New York Times piece, quote, "Feeling squeezed by a sagging job market and mounting student debt, a groundswell of university-age heretics are pledging allegiance to new groups like UnCollege, dedicated to hacking higher education. Inspired by billionaire role models, they consider themselves a do-it-yourself vanguard, committed to changing the perception of dropping out from a personal failure to a sensible option, at least for a certain breed of risk-embracing maverick." End quote. A counterpiece to this rhetoric was also in the New York Times, where Rick Wartzman, who was probably never teased about his surname, says that even for the most risk-embracing mavericks, foregoing college is not a sensible option. The odds that you can find career success without a degree in today's knowledge-based economy may not be as long as landing a career in professional hoops, but they're plenty daunting nonetheless. The latest numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics show that among those age 25 or older with only a high school degree, the unemployment rate is 8.4%. Now that compares with 6.9% for those with some college experience and just 3.8% for those with a bachelor's degree or higher. Over their lifetimes, meanwhile, those with college degrees can expect to earn far more than their peers with only a high school education. In fact, the piece I read believed that figure to be nearly $500,000 across the lifetime of a worker. Quote, "The bottom line is this, while college may be 50% more expensive now than it was 30 years ago, the increase to lifetime earnings that a college degree brings is 75% higher, two analysts explained recently. In short, the cost of college is growing, but the benefits of college, and by extension then, the cost of not going to college, are growing even faster. However, some maintain that plunging into the real world is the best teacher of all. Education isn't a four-year program, it's a mindset," remarked one 22-year-old university dropout turned software engineer. Well, Wartzman tends to think that college, more than anywhere else, encourages exactly this kind of thinking. He says it's a wonderful gateway to lifelong learning, teaching people to think critically, accept new ideas, and try all kinds of new things. In fact, a survey of more than 2,000 adults last year found that among those who graduated from a four-year college, 74% said their education was very useful in helping them to grow intellectually. And I don't doubt that. But there are professions and pursuits out there that no college can prepare you for. Curriculums evolve too slowly to keep up with the lightning pace of today's world. In terms of the numbers, I would wager that of my high school peer group, I earn the least amount of money every year. And if all we're going to concern ourselves with is annual income, the facts as I just laid them out speak for themselves. On the other hand, I'll wager that I am the only person from my high school peer group that can't wait to get to work every day. And that's because I followed the advice of a famous college dropout who advised the 2005 graduating class at Stanford University to do what you love. College may not be for suckers, but you're a sucker if you think college is the only path to success. And that's how I feel about that. If you're wondering what set of rules to follow as you make decisions regarding what foods to feed to your little ones, well, the answer should be obvious, right? You follow whatever the most recently published set of them say. Until, of course, they're controverted then by a subsequent set of rules, and then you just change everything over to accommodate that. Well, guess what? Should come as no surprise. This is a new set that's been written. Pediatrician Alan Green put this out, and it was covered in Parenting Magazine over on Baby Center. Even my trending show co-hostess, Natalie, summarized everything neatly about these new guidelines, including it's okay to skip the rice cereal these days. Pediatricians are saying that sticking with bland foods might contribute to the creation of a picky eater. They recommend whole grains and foods with spice, sourness, sweetness, and more. Go ahead with bold flavors. It'll help your baby develop a wider palate for foods. They say there's no need to wait so long between introducing new foods. The old convention was to wait up to 5 days before introducing a new food, but no need, says Dr. Alan Green. He says, quote, introducing new foods rapidly leads to more adventurous, happy eaters, end quote. And they say that the foods that were once considered to be dangerous maybe are not so dangerous, really. Dr. Green says that there's no reason to delay foods that we once thought could be risky, like eggs, nuts, fish, and others. Research shows that delaying these foods too long could actually cause allergies, not prevent them. So there you go. Until the next set of rules about feeding little ones are published, those are the ones to live and die by, people. All right, a couple things here before I get around to reading your little victories. I always forget to solicit for your positive reviews in the iTunes store, but management here at Grizzly Productions has threatened me if I don't do it in this episode. So won't you please head over to the iTunes store and leave a 5-star review and your positive commentary about Daddy on Board. It really helps us to percolate up to the top of search results in iTunes. And by the way, if you haven't checked out the new iTunes 11.0 that they rolled out, it is pretty cool. I'm like the last guy on earth that ever cares about those types of updates when Apple rolls them out, but they've really done a great job of like streamlining the whole iTunes experience, and it is pretty cool now. And if you're not an iTunes user, this might be a great time to get on board with that. Nevertheless, I want to let you know where you might be able to catch up with me before I make another Daddy on Board. They tend to happen about 7 days apart, as my schedule permits. I'm on The Trending Show, which I co-host with Natalie Morris. That's where we discuss the top trending topics in Google and on Twitter, unless, of course, I'm supposed to be in the ring when we're recording, and it's impossible for me to be both wrestling and podcasting at the exact same time. You'll always catch me over on The Mothership here at Grizzly Productions. I'm talking about the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. Over 4 years and running, my pal Clayton Morris and I team up each and every week to kibitz and talk about all things pop culture, coffee, superheroes, music, you name it, we talk it on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. If it seems vaguely familiar to you, well, maybe it's because we were splashed all over the front page of iTunes podcast section all week long. That's because this week's episode, we're joined by special guest star Glenn Phillips, frontman of Toad the Wet Sprocket. We talked to him in depth about all kinds of stuff, including the Toad the Wet Sprocket reunion, and you can listen to that wherever fine podcasts are sold. Next week on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, we're probably going to talk endlessly about our recent trip to see the Reunited Monkeys. I bet you that's going to be like the whole episode when we get around to it. Be forewarned, Dub Bobbers. Be forewarned. Without further ado, I'd like to read the little victories that you sent in to me via Facebook fan page, Google Plus, or at the Daddy on Board, which is my Twitter handle. My other Twitter handle, by the way, is Mike Quackenbush. I almost said twiddle handle, and twiddle, as far as I know, is not a means of social media. But maybe I should patent that quick. Walter Walker wrote to me, this baby Ellie, standing on her own, hasn't figured out the walking part, but she's close. That's more than a little victory. Hashtag that big stuff. Congratulations, Walter. Tim Glass also sent in a little victory. Tim said this, day 3 of 10, watching the 2 and 4-year-olds, while my wife is out on business. All three of us have pulses, and none of ours are too elevated. Thank you for sending that in, Tim. If you ever feel like in those types of situations you're at a loss for new ideas, might I recommend the John Candy film Uncle Buck, which is filled with great parenting tips, cues, and advice for folks like you and I. Seek that out if you don't immediately get the reference. Also, over on, I guess it was on Facebook, is where this one came from. Al Kush wrote to me. Al says this, successfully negotiated Thanksgiving Day plus 2 other days at the home of my almost ex-mother-in-law, complete with my almost ex-husband, almost ex-sister-in-law, and almost ex-brother-in-law. Seriously, I think all of us did a great job in making this Thanksgiving as abnormal as usual for 2 boys going through the pangs of having their parents split. Al, upon reading this, two things has dawned on me. One, there's a passing chance that despite what I thought, you might be female. And two, based on all these exes that were showing up, I can't help but wonder if this was held at Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters in upstate New York. Well, that's going to do it for another edition of Daddy on Board. Between then and now, catch me on the Grizz, catch me on the Trending Show. I'm in Troy, New York, wrestling for Wrestling is Awesome. And be sure to catch me in about 7 days' time when I'm likely to return to this same outlet with a podcast I will record and then title for your pleasure, Daddy on Board 114. Adios, mis amigos.